This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Minnick.
I'm John Cruz.
I'm Chris Palmer.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And we are here to argue, according to John.
That's not really I guess. but there's some disagreement.
We may or may not have disagreement. What we want to talk about are, we've talked about this, I think, a little bit already, side distributions and, you know, how there seems to be a bias towards the affirmative, towards the negative in various things. So, Mike, why don't you start? I mean, you had VBD, so you saw serious neg bias at the tournament this last weekend, right?
Yeah, I think it probably goes back further than just VBT. I think that the neg bias has been recognized for a lot of years, even going back, I don't know, early 2000s or whatever. I think anecdotally, I don't have any data. I think that the negatives have won the majority of TOC and NFL championships. I think the negative has won the majority of out rounds at the TOC, at the very least. I don't know about at NFLs, but anyway, so this weekend, I've done this for a few years, but this year, we have a podcast, so I can talk about it. So at Blake this year, I think in the triples, which was a full triple octafinal, and in the double octafinals, the affirmatives won 22% of debate rounds. At the VBT, some things to note were in round seven, while the printout showed that affirmatives won 37%, if you looked at rounds where the debaters were still quote-unquote in it, that is two downs or less, they had only won about 17% of the elimination rounds. You know, I think that there's probably a variety of reasons as to why that happens.
I'm looking at some other data here. This is bizarre to me, and I'm looking at the Bronx, big Bronx tournament, and all of it here is mostly what you're saying. Everything tends to be either a little bit towards the negative, or in some cases like a 10% differential, except the triple octafinals, for some bizarre reason, was 90% affirmative.
That's the runoff round. It's true that it was
the small sample size, though.
Complete set of rounds.
There are some, but I'll just throw this out, the data that I had here, just so we can have more to talk about, so other people know what we're talking about. I looked at Big Bronx, and Big Bronx had, according to this, 45% in prelims, and through octos, actually, it was about 45% was affirmative. Lexington was 47% affirmative. And then we get into a couple of others here, and they get a little more. At Columbia, which I just did, it was 51% was affirmative. And I throw this out, not because it, because I think it actually says something. In a novice tournament that we just ran, which was also at Columbia, it was 52% affirmative. And so the statement that I'm coming up with, and I don't know if there's enough numbers here to justify this, but that the better you are, the more likely you're going to win on the negative, rather than just negative is always going to win, as in the tic-tac-toe kind of starting thing. At the earlier stages of one's career, it's a coin toss, but as one gets more experience, it may be in fact very true the negatives are, you know, really are winning for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that both the type of debater that you are, as well as the flowiness of the judges, probably has a lot to do with it as well.
That's true. You're getting better and more, you know, better judges, presumably at those levels too. Certainly, you get what you had said before in the rounds that counted. You're always getting the best judges,
right? Mm-hmm. Some of it probably has to do with, you know, just the fact that the negative just has a lot more options. I mean, they have 13 minutes that they can dedicate to what's actually happening in the round, and the affirmative is tied up with 6 minutes of that in the 1AC that they can't really get back or make any in-round strategic choice, which, you know, it's, and then when you couple that with a with sort of, I guess, a nonsensical judging paradigm, not to That's any nice. Individual person, but more to just as LD in general, that we don't say that the affirmative has a burden of proof, but we, you know, let the affirmative speak first and last, and
I think that's the. I mean, I can't speak for Aaron Timmons, but I seem to remember him posting something that I agreed with strongly, that the real discussion here is how the rounds are being judged, right? Because it's not like this is all that functionally different in policy debate, but I don't believe that this side disparity of wins exists to this level in policy debate, right? Or, I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I don't think I am wrong about that.
I mean, at least back when I was much more involved with policy debate, I mean, it was always advantageous to flip affirmative because you got to set the tone of the debate. That if you, like, for example, I probably, if you were to look at my judging, I probably bias more affirmative because in a debate round where the affirmative sets up a problem and solution, I will generally give a lot of weight to that the negative has to have some offensive reason to vote against. It can't just be they didn't show enough problem or they didn't show enough harm. I won't vote on defense. But, you know, a paradigm that says that the negative doesn't have to do that, I think will definitely skew more negative. The problem might be more the judging, but I think that we're not going to change how people judge. I just don't think that's going to happen. So. I think something should be done.
But just to play devil's advocate for a moment, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, I do want to point out that there have been radical shifts in the way policy debate is judged, right?
I think most people still consider themselves policymakers, which since at least the late 80s, that's...
Right, but that's what I mean. Like, there was a hypo-testing movement. There have been other means of looking at rounds. Like, you know, judging has changed.
Yeah, but LD doesn't have the college community to sort of push down and to be thought centers and to be... I mean, there are people at the college level in policy debate who their lives is to think about debate, and it's what they do, and they write scholarly articles on it, and they have conferences and meetings and those sorts of things that we just, we don't have in LD. Certainly not in the high school community, and certainly within the high school community in LD. That sort of thing. To me, it seems if there's going to be if we're not going to change the judges, which I think is going to be a lot more difficult because you can't force people to judge a certain way. I think that there that the attempt of the wording committee to tinker with wording to try to bias it in favor of the affirmative, such as using negative, the negative of something to call something unjust as opposed to just, or to say not or whatever, to in order to try to bias it, at least in terms of political ideology or some people might just say common sense, in favor of the affirmative has backfired maybe and leads to even more problems. That the more wordy you get or the more you try to tinker with it, the more you actually open up for the negative to run against the affirmative in terms of theory or a priori sort of arguments. And so to me, the change might have to be more structural in nature.
Why do we import all the... here's something that I just don't understand about LD. This is obviously a more rhetorical question and something that I'm not like the first person to ask this, but what I don't get about LD is, like, why do we import these things from policy debate without a deeper thought process about what it means to import these things? In other words, odd elements of policy debate just seem to be randomly decided that it's okay for them to be in LD without the theoretical framework that exists in policy debate. Does that
make
sense?
For example, what?
Well, just the, I mean, we're talking about like the policy making paradigm, like these well thought out paradigms of how rounds are to be adjudicated, right? I mean, these arguments in policy debate don't exist in a vacuum. Like the theoretical arguments don't exist apart from the idea that the judge has a certain role, etc. And I feel like debaters just sort of import, and I don't have a I want to say it's not that there's an issue with importing ideas from policy debate, because the reason that these ideas get imported as policy is a much older activity with a theoretical framework. But it seems weird to me that so many debaters don't consider out these ideas when they're importing ideas. Does that make sense? I'm kind of rambling, but I feel like that's like a fundamental issue with the
moment. I'm not sure if it's – I mean, more annoying to me, I guess, is when they use the jargon of policy debate when it doesn't apply.
Well, that I definitely agree. Like the conditionality stuff.
Right. That to me doesn't make as much sense as much as – you know, I don't know if it's fair to – you know, I don't know if it's necessarily fair to say what it means to affirm – or what it means to negate the resolution as a judge, just to impose that. If someone walks in with a traditional value criterion structure, and you know they argue that you know that the standard is this, and it's the best standard in the debate round, even though it might not cover everything, you know that if I
meet I guess I don't disagree with that. I mean, what I'm saying is admittedly an incomplete thought here, but I feel like. I feel like a lot of these issues about negating, it seems that if a lot of the structural issues still exist in policy debate, they're similar enough in policy debate, you know, they have the block and whatnot, that it can't just be the structure that's causing these problems with LD side disparity, that it has to be things that debaters / coaches, but I suspect mostly debaters, aren't exploring enough in rounds, right? Or there's just not enough dialogue about how the judge should evaluate the round, even given a different paradigms about value and criterion and whatnot.
I don't know if that'll happen. I mean, I don't know how we get everyone in a room and say we're going to decide what the paradigm is or what it means to do.
By the same token, I mean, you have. I mean, if you're going to debate, you're going to pretty much debate 50% of your rounds on the affirmative. Right. You've got to do something about that. And I don't think you're going to be able to change the numbers of minutes, and I don't think you're going to change the judges, so you got to change the debaters. I mean, the debaters have to come up with a strategy that...
I think you can change the numbers easily. I mean, I shouldn't say easily in the sense that it's easy to come up with what's going to work, but to rearrange a little bit so that there's maybe another affirmative constructive, so that there is more time for them to flesh out arguments, maybe there is... you know, you take one of the negative construct. I do believe that the affirmative has to speak first and last, just because I do believe that affirmatives, rightfully or not, are held to a standard of there being a burden of proof on their part.
This is where I think that there's the one place where LD is sorely lacking. I still don't quite understand why there's not a burden of proof on the affirmative. This has been explained to me many times, like a value debate, there is no burden. That does not make any sense to me. In a logical debate, one side has the burden of proving a proposition.
If I say let's go see I'm just looking at my movies. If I say let's go see Exit Through the Grift Shop tonight.
All right.
I don't have any burden of proof to say that we need to go see that over doing nothing. Or anything. We can argue back and forth about that without me having some sort of burden of proof.
The way that makes sense to me is that if LD is a value debate, that is fundamentally descriptive, not prescriptive. Right? You know, a thing is moral and that is a property of the universe, or it is not necessary that you need to take action. Where if you're forming policy, that is prescriptive. And so you have a burden of proof as a result of that. But to describe something as, you know, something you should not do does not necessarily mean you take action. It just means this is a fundamental property of the universe.
I guess I sort of agree with that, except that realistically, in a lot of these, at least in the tournaments that we seem to be focusing on, in the styles of debate we seem to be focusing on, it's not like the LD debaters are prescribing policy, right? Or like that.
Well, and as soon as they do, I think. And as soon as they do, I think they do probably take on some burden of proof, but it's not necessary to do so to prove the resolution.
But to be fair, I don't think that's limited to national circuit LD. I think that.
No, I didn't mean to say that it was.
No, I'm not saying that you are, but I'm saying that that'll be what people will read into what we're saying when we're saying a certain style. Because if you even go to NFL Nationals, you know the. As much as judges and coaches will say, I wish LD were more like a traditional LD, you know, that they still want examples of stuff.
Yeah.
They still want you to weed it down to some core examples of the resolution. They want you to say, what does the world look like if we vote your way?
And forget NFL Nationals, like our Metro Hudson League debates. This is happening there. I mean, local debates. That to me, that's where the real thing is here, because you have these kinds of like what I see happening at a lot of more local events is that these things are sort of, I don't want to say filtering down, because I'm not trying to say that the national circuit is doing something right or not right, but what's happening is you're getting sort of these like undeveloped or underdeveloped approaches to the round without people really fleshing out what they mean, and I feel like that's an issue. I think it's a related issue to what we're talking about. I don't know.
I to me, my concern is to try to, in the path of least resistance, try to even it up a little bit. I don't believe that we can tell debaters that there are rules as to what they must do in order to prove the resolution true or to prove the resolution false or to vote affirmative or to vote negative, because those will change with every single topic. And I don't think that that's possible. I don't think we're going to get judges to change, because people, you know, they don't want to be told what to do. I think when it comes to their judging. To me, it makes sense to try to come up with something in the times. And I don't think that we can add significantly more time to the round. Although
there's enough time altogether already.
Although the notion that two Lincoln-Douglas debate rounds fits in a policy round is just false. I don't think that tournament schedules can be made that way for the most part anymore. But I do think that we should roughly try to have 13 minutes of speaking time. Maybe take some time off of cross-ex or prep time or whatever, and add that into the round if we needed to add more. But I do wish that there was more time for back and forth in the debate round, so that there was more time for synthesizing arguments, picking of key issues in a debate round, which might mean
a shorter constructives.
Or more constructives. Give the affirmative a 4-minute opening speech and the negative a 4-minute opening speech. Then give the affirmative a 3-minute constructive where they can make attacks against the negative, and then give the negative 5 minutes next where they can, sort of synthesize and start moving into rebuttals, and then give the affirmative another speech, and then the negative, and then the affirmative. Some way to allow the affirmative and I guess the round to develop a little bit, because I still feel like to some degree a lot of this comes through because the affirmative doesn't have the opportunity to make a strategic choice based on what's happening in the debate round, because that can't happen till 2 AR, because you don't get to see the second level of the negatives, how it morphs or how it responds to your responses until you have your last speech, and that's just not a whole lot of time to do that, especially when the negative can spend 6 minutes doing that, and you have 3 minutes to respond and plus try to find somewhere to get offense yourself. It's too difficult, and where we're holding the affirmative to have a burden of proof. And when you are when you have two equally matched high level debaters with a judge that's flowing and making their decisions strictly on the flow, it's a lot to overcome.
Where can you introduce a different timing of the rounds? I mean, who's going to do that?
I mean, in my mind, it has to almost be NFL, and it can't be just one tournament. It has to be a 1 year or 2 year
like an experiment thing.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be equivalent to the when the NFL introduced flex prep, or when they introduced,
or when the NFL introduced the second minute, the 2 minute final focus of public forum. I actually think that that's a pretty good model of stuff, because even though that to LDers seems like not much of a change, it's a pretty fundamental change.
Especially when the round's only 20 minutes anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, seriously, that's like doubling the length of the last speech. That's an enormous change. Yeah. So, and that transition actually went pretty well. I mean, now, granted, part of the reason that it went well is because I think that there was a fair amount of consensus in the PF community that speech was too short. But there were a lot of people who were not thrilled about the change. At least, you know, anecdotally, I can think of a bunch of people who weren't thrilled about it. So I agree that the NFL would be the appropriate group to do it, because that would also, what I would be afraid of, and this is what I've always thought about when I thought about the ideas of, like, you know, changing around speech times and whatnot, is the same thing that I said to Chris when Chris made a suggestion. We were blabbering about some things about congressional debate, is that when you start changing around things too much, then people might claim that it's not legitimately that event anymore. You know what I mean? Like, so having the NFL grant legitimacy to it, I think, would be important.
Yeah, and if you don't do it through the NFL, you can't get a good example of what it would look like if just some tournaments did it on an ad hoc basis.
Right. So it has to be, everybody has to do it, and they have to do it for a while. I mean, because first of all, there's all kinds of resistance to change, even for the people who want to change. It's just hard to change, and so then you got to get past that. You know, starting friction is always tough, and then you got to do it for a while to see how it plays out. So it would have to be a year or two if this were to happen to actually know if it's a good idea or you know, to know if it's working.
Go ahead.
I kind of disagree with going through the NFL, though, because I think the NFL is much more likely to follow than to lead on this. I don't think they feel like they have terribly much connection with the circuit in LD and vice versa. And the places where this is manifesting itself the most is on the national circuit, which looks more towards the TOC and not very much towards the NFL to set its guide and lights of how it does things. So, you know, the parallel I draw is when the policy community basically, you know, collectively managed to make their own rebuttals longer. And the NFL were the last people to cave in on that one.
That's actually true. Or prep time, too. You know, the same thing. TOC was actually the first, or at least one of the first to have the...
I think Wake started the ball rolling on the rebuttals anyway.
Yeah, and in for LD with prep time anyway, the TOC, for as long as I remember, had 5 minutes of prep time. And, you know, the NFL isn't five yet, but it moved from 3 to 4 in prep time. And I guess the same could be said with computers and debate rounds. The NFL was not the first was probably the last to embrace that.
And I think by their nature, that's not wrong for them to be so, but I think looking to them to mandate a change is probably not going to be very effective. You know, they've got a lot of constituencies to answer to that aren't us, more or less. And
if TOC announced that they were changing the times to whatever, almost every tournament I go to would change their times.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
Although I don't think the NFL need... Because I'm not 100% sure on this, but, you know, I think that the negatives are winning a majority of the out rounds too at the NFL tournament.
I always thought everyone wants to affirm at the NFL. I think
that's a misconception. I think maybe in prelims at the NFL that's true, and but I think. Once you start,
finals, people may want to affirm, but it might not be a good idea too. I mean, there are a lot of bad ideas out there.
That's true.
I think that might also just be a misconception that, you know, that you can lie more in the 2AR at NFL Nationals. I think, aside from it just being wrong to do that from a ethical standpoint.
I mean, did you just say lie more?
Yeah.
Well, that's what that's the fear that everyone has about the 2AR, that the 2AR is going to make new arguments, and the judge is not going to catch it.
And if the judges aren't flowing judges, then how are they going to know?
All right. That's
or the affirmative just says, of course I can make a new argument. That's why I have another speech.
Yeah. And this is the national tournament.
It happens. I mean, this happens in Yeah, okay.
Oh,
okay.
The CFL is rife with this.
The CFL is ridiculous.
Well, CFL, I mean, you know,
the times I've judged LD at the CFLs, I mean, the 2AR had very little relation to the rest of the speech at all in many of the rounds. So it's like, no, nice try, kid. No.
But I mean, yeah. Well.
Of course,
I mean,
you can't tell them that either. So what
are
you going
to do? You're not allowed to talk.
Yeah.
So. Not allowed to look at them funny, for that matter.
Oh, hey, I broke that rule, if that's true.
Well. I know, but people, I mean, actually, maybe you should talk to them. That way they'll make you stop judging, and then you can go out and do something else. Yeah.
But then they charge you like $800 for the privilege or something. So
that's true. I have paid the fines. Anyway, I mean, is it conceivable that one could have the TOC make this kind of change? I mean, if they, in fact, are the instrument that would make it happen.
Well, there's two questions there, right? Which is, would they do it? And, you know, for whatever value of A, and what change?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the second one, I think, is the much harder one, because you could have people say, oh, there should be a change, but there could be six different theories about what the change should be.
I think everybody sort of believes that the first affirmative speech should be like maybe 4 minutes. So it's just a question of then what do you do?
Yeah, do you make the 1 hour one?
Like what Mike was just saying, seemed to have a lot of speeches back and forth. Yeah, because it seemed a couple extra speeches.
Not to sabotage all this, because I actually am finding myself surprisingly compelled by everything Beats is saying, which is not to say that I thought it was a bad idea to begin with, but I'm sort of resistant to the idea.
You're just not used to listening to Beats, right?
No, that's not true. Actually, I find I almost always agree with Beats, but radical speech time changes have always seemed odd to me. But everything Beats is saying makes sense. However, I'm also thinking about what Beats was saying before, which is that people will always twist this into the national circuit is from high on, you know, to pushing things down on everyone else. And my fear would be that if the TOC is the source of the change, the TOC itself, it's coming from the tournament of champions, that people are going to – there's going to be a rift, or there's a fear of a rift that I have from that. I don't know if that's an unfounded fear. But
if the TOC does it, and, you know, if the NFL never changes and local leagues never change, then that's just how it is. I mean,
but then isn't there even more of a separation from local leagues to bid tournaments?
But I mean,
in California, the local leagues never debate the January February topic.
All right.
Yeah, there's other change. The other thing is, when you're starting out, if I'm going to train somebody. I might train them with these times, and then I move to some other times later on. Just like I might start training people in public forum, and then turn them into LDers or something. I mean, we have plenty of everybody has different ideas of how to train people, and maybe you start them as policy people, and then make them LDers, whatever the case may be. So we're perfectly willing to make that kind of radical change because as people get to be better debaters, they're capable of doing different things and more complicated things. So we say, well, after you get to be a better debater, and you wanted to go over there, well, they're going to be debating like that. But it's like changing from, you know, one style to another style, a very small change stylistically when you think about it. It's not that revolutionary. It's not so crazy compared to what people normally do anyhow.
Yeah, I don't think there's that big a deal. I mean, we've got kids in our program swapping back and forth between policy, LD, and PF all the time. And, you know, their heads don't spin around and blow up as a result of it. You know,
yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody else is what... Yes, there are going to be some extremely dedicated kids, and they're going to be like the ones who want to win TOC, and they know this when they're in sixth grade or something like that. Well, fine, there's a very straightforward path to getting there. You're going to start doing, you know, your local league might do LD the old-fashioned way, and after you achieve a certain level of success here, you're going to start going to tournaments that do LD a different way. But it's still LD, and that better you're ready for that better way when it happens. I don't think there would necessarily be the rift there so much because, I mean, certainly if you have empirical evidence that, you know, always that, you know, a certain side has an advantage, and the advantage has nothing to do with much of anything except, you know, structural issues, and changing the structure would therefore be a way to make it 50-50 because, like I say, I want to go into a round knowing that it doesn't matter what side I'm on. Now, obviously, resolutions sometimes have a little bias. But, you know, in general, I would like to think that I have a good chance on either side. And that if I go in, I'm not screwed because I'm affirmative or screwed because I'm negative.
I don't disagree at all. And if it's more pronounced at, quote-unquote, the TOC tournaments, or especially at the TOC itself, I guess as an advisory board, we have some responsibility to make sure that you know, when someone arrives at the TOC, they have an equal chance, whether they're affirmative or negative. That seems to be reason enough to at least explore this idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I would definitely say you should bring that up this year as a serious recommendation. But you have to figure out what it's going to be. I mean, you got to make like a proposal of the numbers.
Yeah. But the TOC committee can also reach out to tournaments and sort of say, all right, are you guys willing to go along with this? I mean, if the TOC committee came down and said, you know, we're going to adopt essentially a modified public forum timings for LD. You know, they each get 3 or 4 speeches and they get to deliver them all and whatever. You know, I would use that at Yale, no question.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to mandate, though, that a qualification, at least not to begin with, that qualifications require that you do that timing, because that would cause a big riff.
But what you do is say, here's what we're going to do with the TOC, and I think the wiser TOC bid tournaments would say, well, the kids who aren't, you know, at my tournament are going to want to prepare for that.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, you and I at least, and have novices and varsity at our own tournaments. And so you have one going one way, the other going the other way. So what? I mean, in my tournament, I have my novices debating a different topic. You know, so,
exactly. I think the modest novice thing proved that any idea that there's disparity. I mean, there's going to be disparity between novice and varsity in every sense, even if the times were identical.
Actually, that's really true. The modest novice really proves that. You know, we do this now, and this is the second year we've done it, where the novices have a totally different topic. And all these people told us you can't do that. It will confuse all the judges and all this stuff. I have yet to see the judges.
Well, I think a lot of people sort of view judges like this Neanderthal-like simpleton.
And no, I've seen that.
Judges are often
judges.
Neanderthal simpletons in certain
John,
ways.
I want to give you a list of people.
We're going to name names.
But I agree with everything that you're saying. I mean, I actually, like I said, the only reason I'm saying I'm surprised that I'm agreeing with the stuff Beats is saying is that the more I think about it, really, I've always thought that there's probably a good idea fundamentally to explore these things, but the more I think about it, it's like I don't think that there would be, I guess, the violent resistance I sort of imagined.
Well, especially if you used a format that was there already. And that's why I keep coming back to the idea of modeling it on the PF back and forth structure. It is because it's familiar to people. People know it. You know, the policy timings and the PF timings, it sort of makes sense. It's a very parallel round. And whereas LD is this deformed monstrosity where there's no parallelism, there's no back and forth at all.
So,
and by going to something that's...
But would there be... Wait, Beats... In Beats, you know? in the Beats model, then there's nothing that's equivalent to like a block or what?
Here's what I sketched out. I have 1 AC 4 minutes, a 2 minute cross X, a NC that is 5 minutes, then a 2 minute cross X, then a 2 AC that is 3 minutes with a 1 minute cross X, then an NC that's 6 minutes with a 1 minute cross X, then a 4 minute 1 AR, a 3 minute NR, and a 3 minute 2 AR.
That sounded like 6 hours. How long did that add up to? Yeah.
That's 14 minutes of speaking
per debater
and 3 minutes of cross X.
Okay. Wow, it sounds so radically different. So the first affirmative is going to get there and present essentially some arguments on their side. Take out a lot of crap out of some of these affirmatives have all this like extra baggage in them.
Well, the nice thing about this, I mean, to not get too technical into how it might play out, a lot of what the affirmatives put in their speech are spikes.
Yes.
To ward off negative arguments.
I shouldn't say almost never,
you know, you put in 10 spikes because you might have to use 5 of them. So with having another affirmative constructive speech, you can actually make those arguments that you put as spikes in the 1 AC now can go in the 2 AC because you're allowed to make new arguments.
Right. I was going to say that. Okay. This is a perfect, you can make new arguments in your second speech on the affirmative. Okay.
Right. Yep. You know, you do get a cross X after that, so that the negative can clarify any new arguments that you made. And then you have a 6 minute NC where it almost acts like the block because it's 6 minutes long,
right.
And that's that's analogous to the current NR, where, you know, there's some element of constructive because they are extending their own case and they're going to make new arguments to arguments that you made against their case potentially. But so that's 6 minutes. The affirmative then has 4 minutes then to extend stuff out of their 2AC and their AC there. And then the NR, the nice thing about adding an NR speech that's truly a negative rebuttal is that it forces the negative to have to choose what they're going for. Because in the current system, the negative does not have to make any choice. They can read 6 minutes of
everything.
Of everything, and the 2AR is forced to go for everything. If you make the NR 3 minutes and the 2AR 3 minutes, then the negative is forced to do the same thing that the 2AR has to do, and that is
I like that. I like that.
Now, you don't think that the negatives would just go for everything in the six-minute block there?
They can't. Well, the judge is only going to vote on what's extended through the 2NR.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, a judge is usually laughed at if they vote on something that took place before that wasn't said in the last speech.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's forces.
Because I'm tempted in a way to say that maybe that 6 should become a 5 and then the NR becomes a 4, but I could see your point too. That would undermine that.
How much prep time would you want to give people on this? I'm thinking that we got so many opportunities to use it.
Actually thinking that 1 minute of after each of the, like the 1 minute after the 2AC and the 1 minute after the 2NC slash 2, the 2NC slash R, that those minutes could be optional because they did have to do a proper cross X at the top. Mm-hmm. But then at this one, they could use it for either. It would just be it would go in their bank of 4 minutes.
Now I just wanted to clarify. So if they say, I want formal cross X, stand for the cross X, then it's real cross X. If they say I want it to be prep time, it's prep time.
No. In that one minute thing. No, I think it would just be amorphous.
Okay. You know, I'm just curious.
Because I would say that in the 2 minute one above, it would have to be proper cross X. You can't transfer unused cross X time to prep time. Okay. But in that second one, you can.
Got it.
I mean that just becomes prep time, I guess. Whatever.
The only way to know is to do it. You know, the only way to know is to have rounds, see how they play out.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the other thing too is you're not just adding 1 minute, you're adding a couple speeches, so logistically this will take far longer. Because the friction between speeches will add up.
That's right.
I don't think that's a deal breaker, but
and the stealing of prep time will add up too. But like I said, I don't think it's, I mean, the old argument used to be that you have to be able to fit 2 LD rounds in a policy round, but it just...
Yeah, the only place we do this that I go to that I notice it is John's tournament. And whatever's fit. Going on, you know, your policy is like
that's
on
not
a
true
totally
at all.
Different...
They're totally different schedules.
Yeah, no, and that's what I meant. Yeah, no, they're a totally different schedule, and we pay no attention to them whatsoever. You know,
there's
no attempt to have them be on the same schedule. I don't even know anywhere.
Yeah.
That happens anymore, you know. I mean,
and by the way,
Bronx is maybe it's the most differential because you only have two on the first day. Yeah, you know, two rounds on the first day,
and you get all caught up in elims anyway. I mean, it catches up with, and I shouldn't even say catches up. It's always ahead almost. Where if the tournament's doing it correctly and budgeting for enough time, but you know, once you get to elims and you can start single flighting, then it you know, LD blows past policy debate in terms of time.
Yeah.
Well,
it's worth trying. I think the right venue to try it at first is probably like around Robin, right?
That's right. That would definitely be the right place to try it first. Just so that you can, you know, and maybe even record the rounds. So that you can show that, you know, how it's being used. You could see where there might be weaknesses in it or disadvantages. And from there, you know, move towards tweaking it if necessary. I mean, it's always easier to use full minutes as opposed to, you know, 4 minutes and 50 seconds or whatever. But I guess I can't see a speech dropping below 3 minutes It's
because even with the extra minute, that PF final speech is just totally unsatisfying. So
yeah, and then you're really getting into sound bites, and it's tough to tell a kid to warrant their arguments and tell a full story with warrants when it's only 2 minutes. Because a lot of judges, including myself, you know, you don't want them just extending taglines. You want them extending the warrants too in their final speeches. So, given that affirmatives do win with a 3 minute 2AR currently, it seems completely feasible that having those 3 minute speeches is, you know, isn't crazy.
Oh, I think that those are things worth considering. I would consider doing this at the Bronx Round Robin. Actually, I think
you're early in the year. You have that advantage. You know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if this will turn potential participants off. I don't think it would. I think what this proposal needs is a position paper. Actually, I think there needs to be some sort of written out explanation as to why this is being done, what the function of each speech would be, how a round would work. And actually, one thing I would recommend is to record even before it's done in a round robin a demonstration debate. I think that people need to see it to understand it.
How about we just transcribe what I said as the position paper?
I think staging a debate, recording it, and saying comment on this debate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well,
and the other rule that I, you know, rule as it were, a guideline I would suggest for this is something that came up a lot when I was president of the state league. When you're discussing a fundamental change like this, one of the important things, and John, you kind of violated this rule earlier. No. In the firmament of sins, this is a minor one, but it's kind of important to always just speak for yourself when it comes to things like
this.
Fair. Because
one
of the things I noticed in the state league is people would say, well, I'd be for that change, but I think other people won't.
We actually had
one great incident where we were just considering just shifting everything to email, and this was about 7-8 years ago, and we were still mailing out paper invitations to every single tournament. And I was like, isn't the time come we just email these things? So we sent out a little survey that said, you know, do you want email yourself, and do you think we should shift to all email? And we actually got 100% of the active state league members responding. You know, so everybody stood and was counted, and everybody said the same thing, which is, I want email, but I think you should still do paper because other people might not be comfortable with email. And so we scrapped the paper because everyone wanted email.
That's right.
So, you know, you got to be careful and say, well, I don't know if the schools in Kansas would say this because we don't know.
That's sure. That's a good point.
Yeah, so. I mean, it affects everybody the same way. And, you know, this is not the first time people have talked about this. And we're not the first people to talk about this. The disparity in the, you know, the sides. And that the times aren't so great. I mean, I've been reading about this for years. I mean, off and on, it comes up again. But it's hard to get anything done. It's hard to make any change.
It's funny. I'm putting some stuff together for something for VBD for a column, and I came across this really old rostrum. And it's just funny because I think it's a rostrum from like 1988, and it's already talking about most of the things Beats is. I mean, not proposing the changes Beats is proposing, but addressing these issues in a very similar manner. So it's definitely been around a very long time.
And sometimes a fundamental change like that just needs somebody who's willing to say, "Let's do it." You know,
yeah,
like people
right,
will talk
right.
a long time, and yeah, you just need somebody to say, "Okay, mm-hmm. let's go, we're doing it." Yeah,
yeah. The 1 minute that you add on is made up being able to text in decisions.
There you go.
this weekend at VBT, I mean, we had 100% compliance of texting and emailing in decisions, and we made it a separate texting number from an email address from our help desk, and. Mm-hmm. It was outstanding to be able to do that, and then to text right back clarification questions was awesome. How much compliance we had.
That's amazing. I did Columbia. I had the least amount of compliance this last weekend than I've had so far, including going back to last year at Princeton. You know, and we've only done it a few times when people are far flung and I'm not getting the response from people. I don't know what to do to get people to text me results. But boy, you text me results, and we're going to zip that tournament. And you're right. I have your number. I go back to people. I don't understand what you said. Blah blah blah. Yeah, it's a great system. People don't do it, and it drives me crazy. They don't do it. I don't know why they don't do it. It's beyond me.
If you were to go to VBD and in the post that's called general info and reminders about the tournament, mm-hmm. You'll see right down there. There's a says first please download the sheet, and it has a map, it has a schedule, it has the phone number, the syntax to use when you text in the phone number. It has all that information, and we put that when we released pairings. We put that on the back of every single ballot and on the back of every single pairing. The map, the phone number to call if there's a locked room, the phone number to use to text in your results on every single one.
I put the text number on. I mean, I don't do as much as you've done, but I certainly put the text number right there on each ballot. So,
yeah, and we got within the first round, we had, let's see, about 190 debaters. We had probably 46 judges were used in the first round. In the first round, only 7 didn't text in, and after that, it was about 100%.
I'm jealous. It's those damn Californians and the warm weather, and they all they like to text in the cold weather. You know, your fingers, you can get it. It's like tapping away, and the finger is falling off from frostbite and all this kind of stuff.
Well, see, I was just thinking that's a good reason to text, because you don't have to go outside then.
Well, we didn't. And the interesting thing, I mean, texting is important, but even people that email, we didn't have, you know, there wasn't internet, open internet at the tournament. Just the tab room had internet because we had MiFis, but there was not open internet, and we still got a lot of compliance, which, you know, you would think that people would just defer to wanting to use email or whatever, or since they were using technology during the tournament anyway, you know, that they wouldn't do it. And we were still using the warm room to text out, you know, people getting their pairings by text message. And that all, you know, even with all those things that we made a lot of things easier for people, but there was no internet, we still ran basically on time and almost 100% compliance on emailing in or texting in results.
I think we'll get there. It's just taken me longer to get people to do it.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, too, is Columbia has open Wi-Fi across the campus, too.
Yeah, Wi-Fi, well, actually, no. Wi-Fi, you have to, like, it's like back in the old days when you had rabbit ears on your TV. And you had to, like, stand like this and stand like that. Because everybody in the tab room, I mean, my Wi-Fi isn't working, and I got to move it over here. Now it's working, and then it's not working. And it was the whole
weekend.
Were you
in the same tab room?
Well, let's put it this way. On the Mac, I never had any problem. But anybody with a PC, I mean, it's very true, actually. Everybody with PCs.
Were you in the same tab room as last
No,
year?
We were in a different place. But this was we were in different rooms. We were downstairs or upstairs. Wherever we were, nobody was getting reliable internet. I mean, it was just one of these.
Previous years, it was perfectly reliable. We never had a problem at all. Strange.
Yeah, but just having there's. And I could understand. Okay, well, you know, my grandmother isn't the one texting. That I could understand that, but it's not. I mean, it's college kids or whatever. You know, it's just I don't get it. You know, like one or two people may have forgotten to charge their phone, and everybody else, what's wrong with you people?
I mean, and people. I mean, we did understand that some people, you know, don't get unlimited texting, and it can be expensive. So we offered this email address too, because even the people that don't pay for unlimited texting. Probably might get email on their account because those are usually separate from
And the BlackBerry can be separate. I know that.
Right.
We'll be there, but it's a slog. You're just lucky. You're just lucky to have that more.
It probably helped too because we were sort of spread out all over a campus. So for the judges, you know, it was.
But we were spread out, and it was 0 degrees out. So
well, you would think they would want to do that then.
Exactly, and that way they can take their time coming back. But
Well, of course, if it's 0 degrees, they're probably running like hell to get back, just to get back into shelter. So,
God, it was a cold weekend.
That's why people walk faster on the East Coast, you know. So
I guess so. Oh, man, we're zipping along. All right, we're getting near the end of our time.
Be glad that Lexington was last weekend and not this past weekend, because on Monday in Massachusetts we woke up to -11 degrees.
It was cold enough the weekend we were there.
Beans is from Minnesota. He's used to this stuff.
I'm not used to it anymore.
That's true.
-11, and then the Boston Globe ever so helpfully reported to us that in Murmansk, Russia, which is in the Arctic Circle, it was actually 6 degrees, meaning they were 17 degrees warmer than it was here.
What is the temperature in Georgia for you guys this weekend? Has anybody looked?
I think it's going to be in the 40s, but it's supposed to stop. The precipitation's supposed to be done.
Hopefully.
Oh, yeah, it's up here now. That's where it came from. Now. It came from Georgia, because that's what's hitting us right at this minute.
Everyone who's going to the Barclay Forum for high schools this weekend ought to go to Fat Matt's, the best restaurant ever, but only after I'm done eating there, because we don't want to wait in a line.
John, it's called Emory.
No, it's actually
you don't have to call it by its whole damn official name.
No, for Emory.
Jesus Christ, I can't talk to you about it. It's Emory.
Nope.
It looks like it's actually going to be.
Excuse me, Malcolm A. Bump Memorial Tournament.
It's Bump.
Like he ever says that.
I've never said all those words together.
Barclay Forum is the shortened version of the Barclay Forum for high schools, just like Bump is the shorter version for Malcolm A. Bump. I don't call your tournament Hendrick Hudson. I call it Bump, because that's what it is.
No,
Emory is the
Bar- Henhud.
Screw that.
Well, it looks like we're actually going to get mid to upper 50s. That's downright tropical.
Oh, really? And that is that's worth going to Georgia if you're coming from up here.
Yeah, no, I have family down there I'm going to get to see too. So,
that's actually nice.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely. I'm only judging half commitment too. So,
I'm judging in PF land this weekend. Actually, I'll be in POFOs. So,
that's nice. And then what do we have after that? We have Newark and Scarsdale. So. Actually, some of us will be together in some of these tournaments.
What's, you guys will be together this week. You have your tournament is coming up pretty soon.
Well, we have, let's see, we've got Emory, then the Golden Dessert, and then Stanford and Berkeley, and then the Harvard-Westlake/Notre Dame tournament, then Harker.
That's right, Harvard-Westlake is F. That's right.
Yeah, and then Jed Glickstein's wedding.
Oh,
love that!
Jake Glickstein's getting married. Good for him.
To do us weekly coverage on VBD of that.
That's right. Jeez. Neil Conrad's in the wedding party.
No, next time you talk to him, tell him I said congratulations and hello.
I will do that. It's in New Orleans.
I haven't seen Jed since he was the Yale tournament director.
Jed Glickstein is a major figure in the turnaround of the Yale tournament and the development of the tournament.
Yeah, he was actually the person who pioneered and made it happen to get external high schools.
Yep.
He was the first year that we got the outside sites, and it made all the difference in the world. And I was very skeptical too. I didn't think he would manage to get the New Haven schools that turned around to the idea, but he pulled it off and did so brilliantly. So
that has made a big difference with that one.
Yep.
Thank you, Jed.
Thank you, Jed. Well, on that note, we'll dedicate this very special episode.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Who has zero chance that he'll actually listen to it.
I'm sending him a link.
Well, there's still going to be zero chance. So, guys, have a good trip to Georgia, and see some of you in a couple of weeks anyhow.
Yeah, you'll
Goodbye.
Be at
school. Okay. Well, that was the worst ending ever.
Yeah, that was pretty petered out bad. It wasn't
Cruz got out. Cruz was,
and Cruz was just like, later.
He had enough of this. All right, well, now I'm really going to end it. Okay.
So. Okay, good night, guys.